Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, now in-depth on living large as a long hauler. Forget the high, lonesome mythology. The solitary rider atop his 18-wheeled steed, a vanishing symbol of the prairie and open plains. Our truck-driving guest makes more than $200,000 a year. He can select which jobs he wants to do. And he listens to public radio. He claims that many truckers do. Finn Murphy writes about the divided culture of trucking in his new book, everything from the ubiquity of country music to the cowboy hats to the belt buckles, right down to the food in whatever restaurants are left, are remnants, he says, of the anti-urban, anti-statist, anti-union origins of the wildcat drivers of the 30s and 40s. You can bet we're going to talk about that. As Mr. Murphy joins us, I want to hear from some of the truckers in the five-state area that we broadcast into. If this is the region that you drive or you're just hauling through and you pick us up wherever you are on the road, what is it about your work that is most misunderstood? And if you had to do it again, is this the life that you'd choose? So as truckers, I'd like to know whether you do it all over again and what's really misunderstood about the work that you do. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, M-P-R. Finn Murphy is a long-haul trucker. His memoir is called The Long Haul, A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road. He's with us from Boulder, Colorado. That's your home base, isn't it, Finn?
Yes, Carrie, good morning. It is.
Welcome. It's really good to have you here.
Thanks.
That quote I read about the culture of trucking, I think you're getting right to the heart of this romanticized image of trucking that has really been surprisingly enduring, and I wonder why.
I think part of it is when you're driving a car, say, on the interstates or something, and then you're passing a truck, say, and then you look up and you see the big vehicle and you see the driver behind there. And I think people wonder what that life might be like, and then they fill in sort of American cultural myths about what that life might be like. And my book is about what the life is really like.
Well, so why are we prone, do you think, to fill in still this romanticized version of it? Even as I think most of us know, this is a hard life, and maybe there isn't as much romantic aspects to it as we would think.
I think it's the illusion of freedom, and I think it does go back to that, you know, American wild, wild west kind of myth. And a lot of truckers actually espouse this myth that, you know, we're the last remnants of the American cowboy. And in fact, this is one of the most regulated industries in the country. Every move that we make is tracked, and every meal we stop at has to be put in. So it's not really that free.
And it's not free because, as you say, there is this divided culture between the independent drivers, and that would be you? Are you considered an indie driver?
Yes, I'm definitely considered an indie driver. That's
so,
because
so what does
I don't
that mean?
Work.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that means I don't work for a company in terms of an employee. I'm a contractor to a van line. So I work as a mover, so I move families. I work as a van line. So I make I lease my truck, I get paid by the load, and I can set my own schedule and I can take the jobs that I want. So that's very different from a driver, say, who works for Walmart or FedEx, who's a company driver, probably a member of a union or an internal union. He probably has health insurance. He probably has a pension plan, and he's paid by the hour, and I'm paid by the job.
You say that these union guys are, quote, over-the-road sharecroppers. Why?
No, actually, it's the other way around. It's the independent guys that are over-the-road sharecroppers.
Why?
Well, so the union guys actually do pretty well because, as I say, they have, you know, certain number of benefits, and they're working for a big company like Walmart or something, or FedEx, that does a good job with them and takes care of their employees. I'm out there, and the other independent drivers like me are out there in the wind, sort of blowing no matter whatever comes our way. So we have to cover our own health insurance. We have to find our jobs or find our loads. We have to pay the mortgage on the truck. So we're the over-the-road sharecroppers in terms of just being subject to the shifting winds of the economy.
Okay, I get that. But then again, as you've described in the memoir and as you have described here, there's a lot of autonomy to that. There's a lot of money in that. Are any of the union guys making the kind of money that you're making doing this?
No. So the money in trucking is in specialization. So if you know how to load a big giant Caterpillar tractor onto a flatbed, if you know how to tarp a high value load, if you know how to move families in a transition from one part of the country to another and be able to move their goods without destroying them, those are all value added truck driving jobs. And that's one of the another thing I try to point out in the book is that, you know, we kind of looks like an amorphous group of guys when or mostly guys when you look up at the truck. But there's a whole hierarchy of truck drivers within that that the I don't think the standard American book reader would understand.
What I thought was amusing about this hierarchy is it plays out, as you note, in restaurants, in rest stops. I mean, everybody's aware of where you are on the trucker pecking order when you show up.
That's right.
I mean,
yes.
Who knew?
Who knew? And who knew that the live animal haulers, what we call the chicken chokers, are at the bottom? They're at the bottom of the pyramid. And it's nothing personal. It's just when you're parked and trying to sleep at a truck stop in the middle of the night in a summer. And one of these live animal haulers pulls up next to you. I mean, the smell, you can't sleep. Nobody wants to be near them.
The New York Times has been writing about trucking. Have you seen some of the pieces?
Yes, the New York Times has done a great job about the loneliness of it, about
right.
not being able to make any money. I mean, the annual wage, the average wage is about $35,000, $36,000 a year if you're hauling for a big freight company. That would be like Swift or Werner or Schneider. And that's not saying FedEx and that's not saying the movers. But if you're just hauling a freight box around here and there, that's it, $35,000, $36,000.
Yeah, they talked to driver Greg Simmons, who said, "We're throwaway people. Nobody cares about us. Everybody's perception of a truck driver is we clog up traffic, we get in the way, we pollute the environment." I have to say I've been guilty of thinking of that a few times. "We're just like cops. Everybody needs us. Nobody wants us." Do you feel like that sometimes, Finn?
Sometimes I do. And to add to Mr. Simmons's thing, also there's a perception that, you know, we're a group of atavistic, you know, white rednecks. And actually, the trucking world is extremely diverse. There's way more women now than there used to be. There's a lot of couples that are out on the road. And, you know, we're just regular Americans. We have aspirations. We have emotional lives. We have goals. We're not that different, but we are definitely looked on as different.
Well, but I think I heard you saying at the beginning of this conversation, the truckers themselves have kind of encouraged that image. Is that right?
Yeah, well, the cowboy trucker does. You know, you do see the guy in the high cowboy hat. He's got the Tony Lama snakeskin boots on in the truck stop. He's got the big belt buckle. Maybe he hasn't washed for a couple of days. That guy is still out there.
Gee, I hope I meet up with him. He sounds charming.
He sounds charming. Well, he's the guy of, you know, who would be in the truck stop coffee counter where it says professional drivers only, and he'd be the guy that would look up at me in my mover's jumpsuit, and first thing he'd say is, "What you driving there?"
And what would you say?
I'd say, "Do you have a bank account?"
Yeah. If you think you're going to get snarky with me, let's open our bank accounts, right? Call here from Steve in Morris. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Terry.
Hey.
Steve Burks, you chatted with me before. I'm the guy, I've got 10 years experience behind the wheel
back in the 70s and 80s. So glad you called.
Study trucking as an economist. In fact, I went back to graduate school to understand what happened in deregulation back in 1980, which I lived through as a truck driver.
Wow. So what have you observed about how trucking is changing? And according to Finn, the economics, it can be pretty tough for some of these independents.
It can be. And I haven't had a chance to read Finn's book. I look forward to it. There's a counterpoint, which Finn and you might want to look at by an economic sociologist, Steve Viscelli, called The Big Rig, Trucking in the Decline of the American Dream, which also talks about owner-operators as a special segment of the truck driving workforce, but has focuses on the people who don't do as well as Finn does. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And he argues that that is the majority of the people who are in owner-operators in the owner-operator world, that they, in fact, do about as badly or even worse than some of the company drivers that Finn's been mentioning.
Steve,
and by the way, there are almost no union drivers left.
Very few. Steve,
there are some. UPS is unionized still, but most of the trucking jobs that you can get easily if you want to enter the industry are the ones that aren't that great for most people.
Does it surprise you, Steve, that Finn makes $250,000 a year?
Well, I would guess that that's gross to the truck, but still, that's a pretty good net. And no, it doesn't, because there's always been a segment of owner-operators who understand the niches and the specialization, as you said, and are able to play the angles and do quite well. It's a subset that's a minority of the truck driving population, though.
Steve, good to have your call. And Finn, while we're back on the economics of this, we had someone call who's interested to hear about the mortgage on your truck. How much would something like that cost?
It's about $4,000 a month.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And then this person wants to know, do you get a small business loan for that as an independent trucker, or is it like a regular auto loan?
There are several different ways to do it. Sometimes the truck manufacturer will give you the loan. Sometimes the company you're working for will give you the loan, which is also a potential problem. And then sometimes you can go to a traditional bank, although traditional banks don't like to do this.
And the specialization that you have is you do what we would call kind of white glove moves for executives. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yes, exactly.
And what kind of specialization does that really require? I mean, I know, having read your memoir, but maybe you can explain it.
Sure. Well, first, I do just sort of high-end executives. These are people that don't take part in their move in any way, shape, or form. And, well, 41 million Americans move every year, so it's pretty much a universal experience. So when I say, you know, you're going to be moving, everybody who's listening understands what that means. And for my customers, they don't do anything. I'll walk into the house with my crew in the morning. They'll finish their coffee. They'll leave the breakfast dishes. They'll go take the limousine to the airport. And then my crew and myself will pack all of the cartons, all of the china, all of the high-value art objects, all of the sculpture. We'll crate it, we'll load the truck, and then we'll take it to the other end, and then we'll do the same thing.
Jeez.
So loading of moving van, and sometimes these people have two moving vans worth of stuff. That's 70 or 80,000 pounds worth of personal belongings. You know, 35 tons of stuff is typical. And a lot of it's very high value. So that's where our specialization comes in. I started as a mover in 1976 for a local moving company in Greenwich, Connecticut. So I'm very used to working with high-value goods.
You say, I am a calm, meticulous, unperturbable driver. I'm highly sought after and exorbitantly paid. That didn't happen overnight. And I get the sense it took a lot of discipline along the way.
And a lot of mistakes, Carrie, yes. As I said, I started in 1976. I became a road driver for North American Van Lines in 1980. I was 21 years old. I was in a big hurry to get on the road because of this whole myth that I had actually adopted. And it took me, you know, 35 years to sort of assuage that myth. But, you know, just when your caller Steve was talking about drivers and about how, you know, how they're paid and stuff and the economics of this. You know, one of the things we hear all the time is that there's a huge shortage of truck drivers.
I see the signs for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right on the back of every trailer, you know, come work for us, that
right.
kind of thing. Well, if there's a huge shortage, then why doesn't the pay go up?
Right.
And it hasn't gone up since 1980. So it seems to be there's some sort of missing economic thing here, because the supply of drivers, if it's limited, then the pay should go up. And it hasn't since 1980.
Well, do you have a view on that?
Yeah. Here's my view on that. In the big freight hauling companies, the turnover rate on an annual basis is 85% to 95%, because people come into the business thinking they're going to make some decent money. Then they only make $35,000 a year. They're gone for 6 months at a time. Their family's life is destroyed, and they quit. But because there's such a huge number of lower-skilled jobs throughout this country being downsized all the time, there's always a new crop of people to come in. So it's I mean, from it's you know, your caller Steve mentioned Steve Buscelli, who's a professor who studies this, and you know, it's very exploitive.
So when we're seeing signs, drivers needed, your view is that this is really about the turnover.
If you don't bring a value-added specialization to trucking, it's not a good job.
Finn Murphy is with us if you've tuned in. Hey, truckers, I'm asking to hear from you in the five-state area that we broadcast into, and if you're just coming through. Finn's written a memoir called The Long Haul, A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road, and we've talked about the mythology around trucking, why some of these romantic images endure, the reality of it, the fact that you can make a pretty good living on the road, the hierarchy within the trucking corps. And I want to hear from you what it is about your work that is most misunderstood. And if you had to do it again, is this the life you'd choose, especially given what Finn just said about the travel time and these long days and the challenges of the driving and the fixes that you get yourself into? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. We should say, Finn, your parents weren't delighted that this was the life you were going to choose. In fact, you were going to school at Colby College. You were not that far from getting your degree when you decided to drop out. What was your dad so ticked off about?
Yes. So I was brought up to be an investment banker or a lawyer. But my parents thought it'd be a very good idea in the summers between college to go get some work experience. That's, remember when we all used to do that? Instead of having internships, we all got jobs.
I do.
Yeah. Well, that's a double-edged sword because I got a job as a mover. And in my third year summer of doing that, I actually went on a road trip with a driver for North American Van Lines, and we went down to Virginia Beach from Connecticut, and in this big giant truck, and I was seduced by that, and it, and at the end of my junior year of college, I finished 3 years of college, I decided that I would go and work for North American Van Lines. And my father, so I have seven brothers and sisters. I come from a big Irish Catholic family. My father never went to college, and so one of the great goals of his life was to have put all of his children through college. So when I left to go become a truck driver, which was going backwards as far as the Irish-American cultural progress, that very much annoyed him. And actually, we didn't speak for a couple of years after I went out on the road, but we patched it up.
He came around to understanding this was the life you wanted to leave, and you were making the best of it for sure.
Yeah, well, sooner or later, everybody's got to take their family expectations and put them right where they belong. Yeah. But I don't mean that in a negative way. It's, you know, it belongs somewhere.
You got to live your own life. To the phones here to Sean in Northwest Wisconsin. Hey, Sean. Hi.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, I'm actually driving truck right now. And
great.
I'm on the Bluetooth, so it's safe. I've been on both sides of the trucking thing as a hired driver and wondering why I don't get paid much. And then I bought my own truck and then tried hiring two trucks and tried hiring a driver and learning about all the taxes you have to pay and understanding why the job doesn't pay very much.
So, Sean, your plan was that you would be out driving and then you'd have somebody working for you driving. Why wasn't that as lucrative as you thought it would be?
Well, you got heavy use tax, and then when you buy the truck, you got federal excise tax.
Uh-huh.
And then there's, of course, all the fuel taxes, and then there's a lot of hidden costs that as a driver, you're thinking, why aren't they getting paid very much when you don't, until you own a truck, you don't know all those costs.
Finn, is that the part of the economics of this that you get into the driving that you don't really understand?
Yeah. So then there's other things, too. There's workman's compensation you have to pay. Then there's all this compliance you need to do with respect to monthly fuel reports and logbooks. And you're running a small business is what it is. And you need to understand what all of the factors that come into running a small business entail. And many drivers who do this aren't you know, they're not educated or nobody's helping them to understand what the pressures and what the pressures are.
So, Sean, I'm interested in whether this is the life you'd choose again.
Well, I'm still doing it right now as an independent, owning my own truck, and I can bypass a lot of those costs because I don't have to carry workman's comp on myself, and I don't have to pay unemployment insurance on myself, but I still have to pay for drug tests every quarter, which are $85 a time. I mean, it's just amazing how many people are nicking you, thinking that you're making tons of money, so they'll just nick you here and there for $85 for a drug test. And yeah, it's interesting.
Sean, I appreciate the call, and I'm glad you were listening in to Keith in Graceville, Minnesota. Hi, Keith.
Good morning.
Hi. You're a trucker?
I've been an owner-operator for 39 years.
Tell me about your experience.
Well, I started out when I was 16 hauling cattle, worked driving truck all the way through college, went to work for corporate America for a couple of years and decided that was not where I belonged, went back to trucking.
What is it, Keith, that is most misunderstood, do you think, about the life and the career of the trucker?
Boy, where do you start? the problem is that the average American still believes that there's hookers in every truck stop, that truck drivers are running around popping pills, smoking dope, doing whatever. And like your guest there is talking about the great amount of money we make, et cetera. The truth is, there isn't a self-respecting truck stop in the country that would allow a hooker on their property. Drug testing has eliminated 99.999% of the drug problems in the trucking industry.
Okay. So Finn,
it just doesn't exist anymore. I'm like your guest there. I got into specialized stuff. I will haul oversized loads exclusively. At one point, I had 5 trucks.
Wow.
And, when 9/11 came along, by 9/13, I didn't have any drivers. They all quit.
Wow. Finn,
but if this stuff's starting in this country, we're staying home.
Yeah, Keith, I want to bring something back to Finn that you said, which is, again, Finn, this idea that it's a freewheeling kind of life, you never know what you're going to encounter at the rest stops. Is Keith mostly right that it's a lot more buttoned down than you'd expect, mainly because of all the regulations around it?
Oh, Keith's absolutely right. In fact, truck stops now they're kind of domestic rather than intimidating or threatening. And part of that's because of the drug testing. Part of that's because here's what I think, and maybe Keith might want to come in on this. There are a lot more husband and wife teams driving now. There are a lot more women out there on the road. And I think in general, I think men behave better when there are women around. So the truck stops are a nicer kind of a place. On the other hand, most of them have gotten rid of their restaurants. So now it's very difficult to eat anything decent. Well, it always was, but now it's even harder. So now you just have a Subway franchise inside the truck stop. Mm-hmm. And that sort of hit the social aspect of drivers sitting together with coffee.
You know, the Time stories that we were talking about, Finn, I read one that featured Aisha Gomez, who is putting her daughter through college by trucking. And I thought this was really poignant. She says that you're alone so much in the truck over the road that you forget how to communicate with people. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, and electronics has actually made it worse. For somebody like Keith, who's been out there for 39 years, he probably had friends out there. He probably would run into drivers that he would see. That whole truck stop coffee counter thing was an existing and real cultural thing. And now, a lot of these trucks, they'll have DirecTV antennas on the top. They've got the telephones, they've got the internet. So many drivers, when they pull over for the day, they'll get into their pajamas and get into the sleeper and not interact with anyone.
Jeez. To the phones to Marcia in St. Paul. Marcia, you've done some trucking, huh?
I haven't done any over-the-road driving. I worked for FedEx for 11 years. And mostly I worked on the aircraft side of things, loading and unloading aircraft. But for a 6 to 8 month stint, I was working with over-the-road drivers. And they would come in at night, and they'd go to sleep, as he mentioned. And my job was to knock on their cabs and wake them up after we'd loaded their trucks for them.
Delightful.
And I, well, they were pretty good, but sometimes they'd appear in the window looking pretty frazzled. And I noticed the interesting people, the husband-wife teams. There were some very flamboyant characters, you know.
Really?
Getting out of the cab in a feather boa and high heels. And
what?
Just real interesting people.
What? There's more going on trucking than I even knew. So, Marcia, how many women did you encounter when you were doing that work?
As drivers?
Yeah.
Well, this was back between, I mean, I left FedEx in 2003, so I'm not sure. Maybe about a third were women.
Yeah, maybe that's a good question for Finn, because Finn, you've mentioned, Marcia, thanks so much for the call. Good to have it. You've mentioned more women are getting into the line. Why?
Well, as like Ms. Gomez that you mentioned, even if you're not making a lot of money, it's a great way to save money because, you know, a lot, if you're out there really long haul and not being home, you don't have an apartment. You can't spend money out on the road on anything fun except for food.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be an enforced savings plan. That's part of it. Part of it is the husband and wife teams that are coming in. But I think I was just looking at a statistic recently. I think it's 7% of women are truck 7% of truck drivers are women. So there's 93% will be men. And in the moving industry, it's going to be 99.99%.
And that's because it's so physically labor intensive, right?
I think that's part of it. Although I was working with a woman mover last week and she was wonderful. But it's not, you know, it's not that attractive.
Lori wants to know on Twitter here, if there's a loss during the haul, is there insurance for that or does it come out of the driver's pocket?
Oh, great question. I want the whole world to know this. My deductible is $1,600 per move. So the first $1,600 worth of damage gets lifted right out of my share of the load. So, and that's going to constitute, you know, the huge majority of damages. So, yeah, I pay it, which is why I'm careful with people's stuff, because eventually I'm going to be repairing it.
By the way, and for everybody who's being moved, just remember that Finn does notice what's being moved. He's encountered some interesting things in the house. I will never forget that, Finn. The next time I move, I'm putting all the stuff away before the movers get there.
That's right.
So, enough said.
So the file cabinets down in the basement, just go through those before the movers come, right?
Right.
Your nightstand drawer, just go through it. It's no big deal.
Right. Put it in a box. Seal it up.
Yeah.
To the phones to Ben in Mora. Hi, Ben. Thanks so much for waiting.
Yeah, thank you.
Are you driving at the moment?
I'm pulled over right now. That way it's a little more safe, but I got just on the Bluetooth. No, I'm calling in. I've now been within about a year of driving now. And when I first got into it, I thought, you know, the old way of things, you listen to the guys who've been out there for years, you know, it's not like what it used to be. It's the regulations and everything like that. The things I learned when I was in school and then going to the road and all that, I couldn't believe what the guys on the road, you know, go and do. I was out for 2 weeks at a time, be home for 2 or 3 days at most and be back out again. So it was kind of hard to be with family and stuff.
Is it harder than you thought it would be, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, the new logbooks, the e-logs, everything was going to compared to the paper. I've gotten in trouble once where I couldn't get through a city or whatever. I wanted to get out of a big major city, but I got stuck in there just because of my time. Well, I tried one time to get past, to get on the other side, and I got pulled over, and they pulled me over for running over a log. Well, you can't just sometimes get stuck in big cities where then if you try to get out, you know, you got populations and all the road construction and, you know, people getting up in the morning and stuff. It's hard to get through that kind of stuff.
Right.
So the regulations are making it where, you know, if you have to stop somewhere and get loaded or something, you could end up being running all night long.
You know what I'm thinking about listening to Ben and Finn? I know you're following what's happening with self-driving vehicles and what that may mean when we get to self-driving trucks. What's your insight on that?
So my insight on it is that it's imminent and way sooner than anyone thinks. I think within 5 years or so that long-haul, coast-to-coast trucking will be completely automated. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One of them is the only thing left in the modern supply chain. If you go to a modern warehouse, once the truck is opened and back to the dock, it's machines that are unloading that truck and it's machines that are loading that truck. And it's machines that are figuring out what needs to be put in, what needs to be put out. The only human element left is the driver. And the driver needs, you know, pay, health insurance, and so forth. So the driver needs to be eliminated. That's part of it. And then safety, I think, is the other part of it. You know, we have 50,000 or 40,000 people die on our roadways every year. And we're so used to that number that we don't really think about it. But when you think about it, that's a bloodbath.
Yeah.
40,000 yeah. dead bodies. And it's almost all of those accidents are due to driver error. What if the machines took that number, 40,000 number, down to, say, 200? People in a generation from now would be looking at us, you know, you had a pedal that you accelerated and braked with? You had a steering wheel? You guys were savages.
You know, I think Ben is still on the line. Ben, given the fact that you just got into this business, what do you think of the – Finn says this is coming within 5 or 6 years.
Now, being as a person of the new generation, the younger generation, it's a good idea, but you're taking the human element out of it. A machine can't react, think, or sometimes be aware of its surroundings at all times. I mean, machines will fail. You know, just, I don't know. But since I've grown up, it's a good idea, but I still still feel strong about being able to control a steering wheel, to control a vehicle in cases that you could have emergencies and accidents. But it's the human element that's on the road that usually gets an accident. Cell phone usage,
right.
Not paying attention.
Right.
You know, I see that stuff all the time out there. People always, I get a bad rep when I first started. You know, it's my fault that I'm on the road. Being the way I am, I'm in the way of everybody else. Well, people don't understand the traveling of city to city. You're not traveling with the same car. You're traveling with local vehicles.
That's right. That's a good point. Yeah.
Right. A semi will go through country, nation to nation, or state to state or whatever, you know, and that's people just see us as a problem on the road when we're the ones that got to watch everything that we do.
So, Finn, you're seeing pretty much the end of an era here. Will there always be a necessity for people like you, what you do, the moving and stuff, or soon we'll need nobody on the roads doing this?
I don't know. I think getting rid of movers is going to come later, because you're going to need that matter energy transporter like they have in Star Trek, and then you can move all your furniture from one house to another.
I can't wait.
Scotty will do that. Yeah, I know. That'll make moving really easy. Until that time, at least loading and unloading trucks so that the stuff doesn't get damaged. I'm going to be pretty safe about that. But the other thing is, you know, there's 2 million truck drivers out there. And if they are replaced, then what more concerns me is what are we going to do with those
people? I know.
People?
Exactly. Finn, this has been such a pleasure. And apologies to all the truckers who called in that we didn't get to. But thanks for the conversation.
Thanks, Carrie.
Finn Murphy's book is called The Long Haul, A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road.